Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Sherry Tippy. For the past 2 decades, she has been trapping unwanted beaver in the great Denver area and relocating them to happier homes in the mountains of Colorado. Nationally recognized for her expertise in trapping and relocating beaver, Sherry explains how she learned her craft. Hey, it's not that hard. I'm a woman. I read the directions that came with the traps. A haircutter for inmates in the Arapahoe County Jail, Sherry claims, my guys at the prison know more about beaver than most people with fancy degrees. She lives in Lakewood, Colorado with her family of furry friends. So first, I would like to thank you for your work, and second, I'd like to thank you for being on the program.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me.
Tell me about beavers. Let's start with why beavers and how did you get started?
Well, one of the things I'd like to say first is that, you know, it didn't start out with beaver. I always liked the big sexy animals like wolves and coyotes and grizzly bears and mountain lions. I really didn't think anything about beaver. The story started how I heard a story on TV how beaver were going to be killed for taking down trees in a golf course in Aurora. And I thought, oh boy, here we go again. These animals are going to be killed for doing something that they do naturally. And I first thought, the Division of Wildlife said they had to be killed because there was no place to put them. So initially I thought, well, maybe I could find a place. They could live trap them, of course, and relocate them. So I started calling on the phone, and I met a wonderful director of Rocky Mountain National Park at the time. I explained the story. He had also seen it on TV, and he said, yeah, we'll take a few beaver. And so I was so happy. I called the Division of Wildlife. That's what it was called at that time. And I said, hey, listen, we got to live trap these beaver, and I will drive them to Rocky Mountain National Park, because they said it would be too much money. So I called the trapper at the time. He said, well, you can't live trap beaver, because every time he had tried, they drowned. And I said, well, I'll do it. And I had never even seen a beaver. So, like I said, I went to the division, borrowed their traps. I read the directions that came with the traps, and I was off and running. First night I caught 2 beaver, and then I was smitten.
And how did you catch them? I mean, if the other trapper was drowning them, how did you catch them without drowning them?
You know, the reason that I believe he drowned them, is he was using the wrong kind of trap. And most trappers don't really know anything about live trapping. It's completely different than catching a beaver if you're going to kill it. I mean, who cares, right? I use a wonderful trap called a Hancock live beaver trap. And it just works in a way so it catches the beaver against the back. They are not stressed out at all. In fact, if you bait the trap with anything, they'll eat it all by the time you get there to pull them out of the creek or river. And so that's what I used.
And so let's back up a second and talk about how beavers, like their historical range and what has happened to beavers over the past couple hundred years, and then from there we'll eventually talk about what they do for the land where they live, the land and the water where they live. So first,
sure.
Can you talk about, like, give a couple hundred year history of beaver?
Well, before Europeans came to this continent, it's estimated that there were between 60 to 400 million beaver that ranged from the Arctic Circle to the northern part of Mexico. And one thing I like to point out to kids, you know, when I'm doing programs or presentations for children, is at that time, before we started obliterating them, they came in all colors. There were black beaver in the Great Lakes. There were white beaver in Yellowstone. There were red beaver, silver beaver. I mean, it was amazing. In the 31 years I've been live trapping, I've caught 4 chocolate beaver and only 1 blonde. Anyway, so I just think that's kind of cool.
That's amazing.
And a beaver, what it is, because this is also important, you know, people say, well, you know, the males are bigger than the females or whatever. And actually, you can't really tell the difference in sexes by one being bigger than the other. Because sometimes the female is bigger than the male. And also, they never stop growing. Their whole lives, they continue to grow. One of the record beaver that was caught in Wyoming or I don't know if they found the bones or caught it, was 113 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
There was another beaver caught on the Canadian-United States border that was 110.
That's like bigger than a big dog.
Yeah, yeah. And can you believe the trees that little baby could take down? And so when they were almost trapped into extinction, finally the people realized what it was doing to the land. People were losing their water. I mean, the vegetation was, they had no biodiversity and stuff. So they started relocating beaver across the United States. And a lot of times they'd put them in burlap bags. They'd put them on the backs of horses. And then they would relocate them. One of the things that we do that makes that totally different is I don't stop live trapping at a site until I get the whole family. I believe, because beaver mate for life, and it's believed they are monogamous, that we need to keep that family unit together. They also take care and raise their kits for 2 years before they go off on their own. I mean, they got the beautiful little, most beautiful little family structure you could imagine. I mean, it's wonderful.
So, let's talk a little bit more about the effects of beaver on the landscape. And let's talk about it from two directions. One is, I don't really care about this direction, golf courses and all that, and why they so often hate beaver. And let's give that 30 seconds, and then we can sort of get upset at them, and then we'll go on to the real important thing, which is the effects of beaver on trout, on salmon, on water insects, on water purity, and so on. So first, from the perspective of golf courses and shopping mall developers and all that.
Well, it's not just those people in the cities. It's also the people that move up to the mountains. And I say they take this golf course mentality with them. What they want is a tree here, a bush here, a shrub here, and some flowers over there. And they do not want it to change. And once a beaver comes along and maybe takes a tree down, they get all all upset about it. When there's non-lethal ways to take care of those issues, okay? But mostly, I call it the golf course mentality. Everybody wants a static environment. They want a static yard, habitat, golf courses, whatever. They do not want it to change.
And by the way, I also want to just say that, I mean, I live in bear territory, and I see bears every single day. Just yesterday, I saw some baby bears. They're literally the size of big cats. And since I live in, the babies are, the mother's obviously bigger. And since I live in bear territory, I'm in their home. And so, of course, I'm not, and they kill trees sometimes, and they do all sorts of other stuff. And it's like, that's what happens when you live in bear territory. And so I always sort of defer to them as opposed to, my point is, I would be so delighted, and we can talk about this more later, I would be so delighted if there were beaver here, and yeah, they would change things, but that's cool. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, that's the only thing constant in nature is change. And you brought up a great point. One of the big issues with beaver is, oh my God, they're killing my trees. The trees that beaver take down and with the pruning action of their teeth causes a hormone to set in, and it sends out into the roots, and you actually get all kinds of new suckers coming up in the spring. So beaver will actually propagate the more trees coming up. And the way, what we always suggest that people should do is wrap the trees, do it correctly, of course, with a hardware cloth. I would recommend maybe 2x4, set it about a foot from the tree, because you don't want to have to do it every year. And to give the room tree to grow, and that way you have the big trees, and then you let the beaver have the smaller and younger trees, and so you'll get all kinds of new trees coming up. I mean, people always freak out about aspens. Aspens grow like weeds. I don't know what they're complaining about. When the beaver take them down, the more aspens you'll have.
So let's talk. So they make more baby trees, and what else do beaver do? What do they do to streams? What do they do to trout? Because I know that they improve. I live in salmon territory. I live in far northern California, right on the coast, and they're very important for coho habitat. So, can you talk about the effects of beaver and why beaver are considered so important by people who love streams and forests?
Let me jump back a little bit. First of all, you know, when the people complain about the beaver taking down trees, once they have their dams and lodges completed, in the summertime, they'll eat a lot of vegetation like forbs, bushes, shrubs, even algae and grasses. So they don't just take down trees. I mean, I always say they're not like humans. They just don't take and take and take and take. I don't mean to offend anybody, but anyway, one of the things about beaver, what they do is when you put them in, like, say, a creek, right, and the creek is, like, running and maybe you have a cut in the side of the bank, you put beaver in there. All of a sudden, the water rises up because when they build a dam, it, like, catches that water behind that dam, like in a big pool. Now, this is so cool. If you take a vial of water from the side and another vial of water from the downstream side and you set them on a table, did you know what? The water on the downstream side is so much cleaner. As the beavers slow down the water velocity, all that wonderful, important topsoil that we're losing so much of is actually settling down to the bottom of that pond. And then as the water table rises and that water spreads out over the land, oh my God, you have biodiversity and a beautiful riparian habitat. I bet a lot of your listeners did not know that 85% of all wildlife depend on the habitats beaver create at some point. 85%. There's many animals. Go ahead.
Hello? Are you there?
Yeah, I just thought you wanted to say something.
No. I thought the phone was crapping out. Go ahead. This is great. So your last thing I heard was that 85% of wildlife in North America relies...
All wildlife. Yep.
Go ahead.
All wildlife. 85% of all wildlife depend on the habitats beaver create at some point in their lives. They're very important to some endangered species, and I know like a couple of them. Boreal toads, for instance, because the frogs will lay their eggs in the shallows of a beaver pond where it's warm. And then the little tadpoles come out. It's important for neotropical birds, which we're losing at an alarming rate. So, I mean, the thing, it just goes on and on and on. I'm willing to say, I swear to gosh, beaver are one of the most important wildlife species we have in the habitat. If you have a tail and you don't have any legs on that tail or one kind of crooked one, the table's going to collapse in on you. Well, if you've got beaver, that's like the table holding the legs holding that table there and holding that whole it's just wonderful what they do for the environment, what they do for us in the West especially. If you want water, you want beaver. When any time that you see a pond, you have about three times that amount of water under the ground. So beaver can actually store water. A lot of ranchers here say, if somebody has a beaver pond, oh, God, the beaver's stealing my water. Well, I'd like to ask them, well, where's the beaver taking it? It's in the pond. There is as much water flowing into that beaver pond that's flowing out of it. So it has a sustainable water availability. What the rancher needs is beaver, so he can have a bunch of water too.
So let's back up to this thing you said about wildlife being dependent on beavers, and I'm just going to name a couple of species, and you tell me how they're dependent on beaver. Like, what about elk? How would elk be dependent on beaver?
Well, actually, they're destructive to beaver, because like in Rocky Mountain National Park, the beaver population is 1% of what it was historically, because beaver, when they move into like the riparian areas, they eat the same things that beaver eat. They chomp on the young aspen, the grasses and everything. Plus they tromp down the edges of the creeks and rivers, and they make the water warmer and make it like muddy and, you know, not very good. So actually, I mean, they're there. But then what you need, I guess, is wolves. to them to take care of that pop, even it out. You know, so many people, and I've heard this, some people call me all the time, well, you got to get rid of this, you got to get rid of that. Everything has a purpose. And people think that they can pick and choose which animals they want to get rid of, which animals they want to live with. Like marmots are cute, but they're eating my flowers, you got to get rid of them. Everything has a purpose. One of the best examples that I give kids that we all can understand, it's like in The Lion King. I know it's an old movie, but I love the song, The Circle of Life. Well, it truly is the circle of life. It's like we've got all the variety of animals, right? And humans are in there. And when you pick and choose, you're starting to make that circle more porous. And pretty soon, it's going to collapse in on itself. So we have to learn to coexist and appreciate all wildlife. And this is... go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, go ahead, huh? Please.
I always say, okay, one of the things that that is so real and so aggravating, and this is going to destroy our wildlife, I'm telling you. People will have an issue with beaver or whatever, and they will call the division of, well, whatever wildlife agency, you know, wildlife agency in their state, and they will say, oh, my God, you got to get rid of this, you got to get rid of that, instead of the wildlife agency saying, well, what's that animal doing you don't like? Say in this case, beaver. What's that beaver doing you don't like? And instead of saying, you know, well, you could put up food devices, you can wrap the trees, you can do this, you can do that, they are looking to these people I consider the lowest common. They do not know a thing about wildlife, yet they're making vital decisions on the lives of our wildlife. And every landowner should be upset, because if you downstream and you know about the wildlife, but somebody's getting rid, say, of the beaver upstream and they have a pond, then you're going to get a rush of water. Plus, you know, when you've got beaver all going down a creek or river, I call that beaver into the creek. Because when you get high water, the velocity of that water will be slowed down by each dam. And it'll spread out over the land, and then, I mean, it just slows it down. It's not a horrific flood.
So let's back up again. You said that the population of beaver prior to conquest was, I don't remember what you said, was it 40 to 100 million? What was it you said?
600 to 400 million. 60 to 400 million.
60 to 400 million.
60 to 400 million.
Uh-huh. And just a moment ago, you said that in Rocky Mountain National Park in Colorado, that the current beaver population is about 1% of what it used to be.
Well, historically, right.
And so across the United States, we never did say, what is the current population of beaver, probably? If it used to be 60 to 400 million, what is it now?
Well, you know something? No one does a census. People don't do census on beaver, and because they don't care. And because they just say if there's a problem, get rid of them, kill them, whatever. And so no one has done a census. I can tell you that I'm getting calls from across the United States from people that want beaver. There is beaver in those states, but their wildlife agency will not allow those beaver to be relocated to the landowner that desperately needs them. And the reason is, I believe, well, in so many cases, I know the wildlife agencies they don't want to live trap and relocate beaver because it's a lot of work. But what they're doing is they're supporting their constituencies, hunting, fishing, trapping, right? They also have trapping commercially and trapping recreationally, which means people can actually go out and just trap these animals because they think it's fun to trap and kill them. And so, lost my train of thought. So, go ahead.
The question started with what would the current population be, and then you were saying that across the country, they are often trapped even for fun, which I think is pretty sadistic.
Yeah, and like what I meant to say, if I didn't, is that they never take a population, they don't count a population of beaver anymore. Because basically, They a lot of wildlife agencies, they just view them as a nuisance.
And
so they really don't care.
Another question I wanted to ask is, you said that landowners call you to say that they want beaver there. And let's talk about, and you give a couple examples if you want, of why would landowners want beaver? I mean, and before I ask that question, I want to say I also live next to a stream, and I talk to the local fish and wildlife people here because there are beaver downstream, but there aren't beaver here. And I was saying the same thing. I was going through this process myself. It's like, hey, if somebody at some place anywhere in California is going to kill beaver, I will take them. I would love to have them. I would be so excited if there were beaver on this stream. But they haven't done it yet. But the point is, what other landowners, give me a couple stories of landowners who want beaver and why, in the hopes of encouraging listeners to maybe want more beaver on their land.
Well,
so why would humans want beaver?
Well, when I relocate beaver, first of all, like I said, I always get the families. You can't take beaver from one site and then mix them up with a beaver from another site because they'll kill each other. They don't, you know, they'll fight and stuff like that. You don't want to do that. But the reason that landowners want beaver is to, again, raise the water table, promote riparian and biodiversity, and to create habitat for, you know, wildlife for whatever reason. And so that's why landowners would want beaver. We gave beaver to a sheep rancher. And I've always had an issue with sheep ranchers because they kill so much of our wildlife. But this sheep rancher was really, really cool. He was over by Montrose. And he wanted beaver to give him some ponds so he wasn't losing all of his water. See, if you're smart, you do not call a creek or river a drainage. That means the water drains from point A to point B. It's a living entity. It's a creek. It's a river. And so when you put beaver in there, maybe that's a weak little creek just meandering down, you know, but you put beaver in there, that creek grows and blooms, and the water, you got more water, you got more everything. So that's one of the reasons that people would want beaver. We put beaver years ago on the Utah-Colorado border. They had a cattle ranch, and all the beaver were trapped off that area when one beaver pelt was worth more than an acre of potatoes. And all the beaver were killed. Again, what he wanted the beaver to do is build dams, slow down that water velocity, save the topsoil, right? And so the water would still be on his land. I mean, there were, well, you had a cut in his stream bank that'd make you cry. We gave beaver to an outfitter where they hunt elk. Now, I'm not opposed to hunting. Do not like sportsmen. I'm opposed to sportsmen and hunters are, if they're ethical, I'm jamming. This guy was an ethical hunter, and he had a bunch of property, but the cut in his stream banks, because the beaver had been removed, I swear to God, were 8 feet. 8 feet cut in the stream banks. So where the water should be, on top of the land, up near the, you know, where the land is, and it also drowned out, like, noxious weeds and stuff like that. The water was way down in the ditch. I mean, if I had fallen down there, I wouldn't have been able to get out. And he wanted them to bring back the water for the elk and all the other wildlife that lived around there. Oh, and some people want them just because they like beaver.
And so tell me about beaver themselves. We've talked about their importance. And tell me about their personalities. And I mean, you've said that they have these long-term family relationships. And I know, by the way, you haven't said this, but I've read elsewhere that the beavers teach their children how to make dams. So can you talk more about beavers as beings, beavers themselves?
Well, beaver to me are... They're just magical. I mean, when they mate, like I said, they mate for life. Well, it's believe they mate for life. It's believe they're monogamous. And when they have kits, they'll have kits the first year, and then after that first year, then they become yearlings, and then they have new kits. The kits, well, everybody takes part in raising those little kits. And the first year, I don't know if you have to teach. I don't believe beaver teach. No, I'm here to say, whoever said that was wrong. They do not teach that baby how to build a dam or a lodge. They just know what they're doing. But the first year, because they're just so tiny, they only play at it. The second year, now they get serious. Okay, now they're really going to join in and build that dam or that lodge. But that's like just inherent in the beaver. They come out knowing how to build a dam, how to build a lodge. There's no teaching. I saw this thing on TV. Was it one of the morning shows? I guess, can't remember. And they had this young beaver. And the guy went to pick it up, and the beaver just peed all over. And that guy said, oh, the beaver's marking his territory. Well, now that beaver knew that wasn't his territory. Where's the creek? Where's the pond? That wasn't his territory. Beaver, when you pick them up, they just pee real easily. They just pee. It don't mean nothing. They just pee. So there's a whole lot of misinformation going around. Because I probably handled more live beaver than anyone, I'm willing to say, in the world. I mean, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
The first 150 beaver that I caught, I picked up every one. Every one I picked up. I knew how to pick them up, and maybe it was because I wasn't afraid, and they were going, oh my God, she's not afraid, or they felt me somehow. I was never bitten. And I picked up, I mean, talking big beaver, maybe 35, almost 40 pounds. And these were some big beaver. And when I first started live trapping, I only lived in a two-room apartment, and I would just bring, thank God my landlord was a good biologist, I would just bring the cages that I put the beaver in, my kitchen, put them on the floor, open up the doors, and they could get into my bathtub, come out when they wanted to, you know, go swim, whatever. And they were great. They were just wonderful animals. And when people say, oh, you're making pets out of them, oh, malarkey. When you catch a beaver, and they be nice, and maybe you can pick them up and touch them real easily, once you turn them loose, honey, they're out of there. They don't care. It's just they're not an aggressive animal. They're just not aggressive. Some beaver are. Most beaver aren't. I never like to say, this is what it is, this is the law, this is the rule, because you're always going to find, you know, differences. But what I found is that most beaver are not aggressive. They're easy to work with. And a lot of beaver are aggressive, but even those beaver, if you deal with them correctly, you can get them to do basically what you want them to do. It's just, they're incredible. I want to say also is that, okay, this is really cool. You can't learn to believe this. Do you know that in expensive ice cream, it'll say like pure beaver or pure vanilla extract or vanilla bean? If it doesn't say that and it just says natural flavorings, you know where that comes from? Beaver anal gun secretions. Swear to gosh, look it up on the internet.
And, well, thank you for that tidbit.
Only spend money on good vanilla ice cream.
I will do that from now on for sure. So let's go back to the beaver family and the beavers. You said that the first year they play, and the second year they will make the dams for real. Do they? Uh-huh. At what point do the youngsters leave? Like the bears I mentioned earlier, usually the mother will, here at least, the mother will raise the babies to about a year, and then they usually get kicked off by a male. A male will come through, kick the babies off, and then the two.
Uh-oh.
I'm here. Are you there? Okay. Anyway,
yeah,
the point is,
blacked out on me.
Okay, so the point is that what within a normal familial circumstance, the babies stick around for a year at least, and then what happens to the babies after that?
Well, first of all, the beaver are mate January, February. They have their kits sometime in May. All right. So the 2 years later, when the kits are being born, generally the 2 year olds are kicked out of the lodge. Now, I've also read that sometimes if there's a heavy population of beaver, there's no place for them to go, they will actually stay with the parents. Okay, so they try to kick them out, but if the population is such that they can't, the beaver will, the family will stay together, excuse me. The family will stay together. And, I mean, I've seen, like cuts on the beaver's tail, like jags taken out of it, you know, it's not like perfectly little flat beaver tail. It'll like have a chunk taken out of it. That's when, and the beaver, the family gets real aggressive and saying, you know, get out of here. But if they can't go, they just don't go. And another thing I think is just interesting about the beaver population is it truly is a matriarchal family. It's the female that most often is the first one out of a lodge. Okay, she goes up and down the dam, makes sure everything is okay, and there's no leaks, or she's going to identify the leaks and stuff, and then the male will come out. Okay, but most often, it's the female that's out of the lodge first. It's generally what I have found in handling it. It's usually the female that's a little more aggressive than the male. I mean, I've had females that'll hiss at you, which that don't mean do. If you know how to handle them, that doesn't mean anything. And males are just pussycats. It's just incredible. But like I said, they're born sometime in May. They're born fully furred. Their eyes are open. And they can swim. But they can't dive because they're too buoyant. They're just too little.
And how big is a baby beaver?
They're a few ounces. They probably fit in your hand. Their little tails are the cutest little things you've ever seen. They're so fuzzy and they make that cute little noise that they make. You can go up to a beaver lodge and you can get down and you can hear them like making that little noise. It's the cutest thing.
So how you talk about how you got started, and we have about 15 minutes left, so we're about two-thirds of the way through. But can you start talking a little bit about other people, how they can use your example to find what it is that they love and to start defending that?
Well, it's so important, if you care about something, to do something about it. So often we wring our hands, oh my gosh, but what am I going to do? Believe me, there's always something you can do. I was, first in my life, I was a professional dancer. And I even taught dancing at Arthur Murray's. Then I became a hairdresser. I'm the least likely person that you would ever imagine enjoying to get all muddy in the creeks and rivers. And I love it. I don't camp out. I believe in Bigfoot. I don't camp out. So I saw this story on the beaver, and ironically, I didn't really mean to even get involved, because beaver wasn't one of the animals that I was like blew my mind. I didn't know about them, though. I didn't know about them. And so I just sort of tripped into it. I started going to live trap and relocate. I caught the beaver. I relocated them. And when they were such little sweethearts, most of them, I started reading about them. And I thought, oh my gosh, all the animals that I care about, the big, sexy, beautiful animals and stuff, they all depend on what my beaver creates. So instead of focusing on mountain lions, bears, wolves, coyotes, blah, 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 prey dogs, I realized that by focusing on one animal, the beaver, I got everything covered. Even like water quality and riparian areas and biodiversity and groundwater, they can actually recharge the aquifers. So when beaver take down a little aspen tree on somebody's land that wants some flowers here and a bush there and what the hell ever, I would like to go up and shake them, because it just makes me so aggravated. If you don't like something, damn, learn about it. Read about it. Experience it. And then make your educated decision, which hopefully will be a non-lethal device that the beaver can stay in the habitat where they belong, but we can coexist with them. But we have to give. They're given a hell of a lot because we're taking over their habitat. We have to give too.
You know, your story reminds me of, I mean, you by the way, today you have become one of my heroes. And I'll tell you a story of another of my heroes and people can see how they, what they have in common, which is there's this friend of mine, Dar Jamail, who was an outfitter up in Alaska, and he did not like how, when the United States invaded Iraq, he did not like the mainstream media coverage of it. He thought it was really pro-war. And so instead of just doing what we all do and wringing our hands, he went to Iraq and started writing about it himself. And so I love the fact that you had a complaint, and instead of just calling up your friend and going, oh, this is such a drag, or maybe in addition to that, you did something about it. And that in itself makes you one of my heroes. That is so wonderful.
Thank you so much. You know, our big fight is against the wildlife agencies, because they really, for some reason, don't care. When our Division of Wildlife puts out a...
Let's back up a second. And I completely agree with you. And I have told people for years, like, never, ever, ever call Fish and Game if you see a bear or a mountain lion, unless it's been hit by a car,
no,
you have to die. But other
don't.
Than that,
and,
never,
and then if you can,
ever.
Shoot it yourself. Yep.
And so, but I don't think a lot of people know that. I know that because I've lived in the West, in rural West my whole life. And I know that if you call them to say about some creature, they will come and kill it. That's what they do.
Most often, right.
But most people don't know that. So can you back up a little bit and say what we wish departments of wildlife were and what they actually are? Can you give that to me?
I wish they just stand up for their name. The division used to be, and I hate parks and wildlife, parks should not be ahead of wildlife, it should be wildlife and parks. But these agencies, they are there not to help wildlife, but to sell hunting licenses, fishing licenses, and trapping licenses. They're in the business of making money. And the reason I'm so adamant about that is I was on the Non-Game Advisory Council, and we came up with all kinds of, from 86 to 88, we came up with all kinds of other ways where people, non-hunting public, could give money to these wildlife agencies. They were not interested in any one of them, because they want to keep their constituency together so they're all hunky-dory, working together, selling licenses or hunting and fishing wildlife, you know, our wildlife. And, even the Forest Service. When you hear that Forest Service, a lot of them are just selling trees to whomever. I mean, it's just aggravating. Now, a lot of the forest people really do appreciate beaver, and I respect them for that and other wildlife, but there's too many of the heads of the agencies that are just not standing up to what we think the name means. When you hear a name, do not take that name for granted, because what it's saying most likely is not really what they're doing.
Well, there's a federal agency called Wildlife Services, which sounds like, hey, that's great, they serve wildlife. But of course, what Wildlife Services is known for is they kill literally millions of animals.
On our tax dollar.
Yeah.
And what they're doing is they don't care. They don't care that there's other ways to solve those problems. You know, they used to put poisons out. They did all kinds of horrible things. And, Wildlife Services is just, there are some good people in there. There are some good people. But it's generally not the people at the top. And the people doing it, they don't have a say-so about anything. But Wildlife Services, oh, my Lord. I mean, oh, boy, that's crazy. That's horrible. I used to get their information, and it just broke my heart, man. Just broke my heart. You know, for one thing, it bothers me that they want to tag and put collars on everything. I really hate that. And I heard from a friend of mine who was into bears. So many bears are killed with using those collars. And people make money from doing nasty things to wildlife. I mean, they just do. They make money. There was a guy that did a study up in Rocky Mountain National Park. I wanted to be involved in that study. I wanted to be involved in it. But he didn't want me to, because I wasn't a so-called professional or someone that was just going to take his word for granted. I was getting calls from his people saying, Tippy, the beaver are dying. Why are the beaver dying? In 31 years of live trapping, I've lost 2 adult beaver. That's it. And that was because of flash flooding. That's it.
So I know, so let's talk about relocating now, because I know that when once again, Departments of Wildlife, when they'll catch a, when they'll tranquilize a bear and take it out, oftentimes, more often than not, those bear die, in part because they're putting them into other habitat. But I was talking to someone a few months ago who does work with reintroducing giant anteaters in South America. And in her case, actually, the giant anteaters have a high rate of success. The reason the bears often die, and same with mountain lions, is because they're being put into somebody else's territory. Somebody else, some other mountain lion already lives there. But in the case of reintroducing the giant anteaters, the success rate is huge because there's plenty of ants and the anteaters have been eradicated. So you take one from, like they took one that was somebody was holding as a pet in their backyard. Mm-hmm. You release it and they're very, very happy and they've got habitat. Things are great. So when you reintroduce beavers somewhere, when you trap beavers from the golf course and you take them somewhere else, how do you determine where you can put them that they will have the best chance of survival? And then once there, what are their chances of survival?
Well, when I first relocated beaver in Rocky Mountain National Park, you don't have a say where you put the animals. You have to listen to the people who run Rocky Mountain National Park. The landowners, when they want beaver, I just make sure the habitat's good. And it's important to know that you can also put them in marginal habitat, which means it's not that great. And the beaver can make it great, okay? They can make it great. But when you relocate, when we relocate beaver, and one of the reasons that I believe we're so successful is because I think I have this natural empathy for these animals. And we would put them in cages, and I knew the main thing was to keep them cool. And I would put bags of ice on top of the cage, and I will poke 3 holes, not anymore. And so the water really drips on the beaver and keeps them cool. Never lost a beaver during relocation, never did, never. Okay, I heard of a wildlife agency that was relocating an endangered species called the black-footed ferret. They had a whole truck full of ferrets. Endangered species. All of them died because it was too hot. So then I tell my people that are listening to me, what we need is more hairdressers doing wildlife management because we're more successful. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's great, and also terrible about the black-footed ferrets. So
isn't it though?
When you do. You said earlier that if you were to relocate where there are other beavers, the old beavers would fight them off. So how far apart, if I know that you said that the Rocky Mountain National Park people, they decide where to put them, but if there's a beaver, let's say that there's a beaver on a stream, where would be the closest you would reasonably put other beaver? A mile, 5 miles, 10 miles? How close would you put them in good habitat, say?
A lot of times, when you put beaver, you relocate them, you set them free, they're going to either go upstream or downstream. So what I like to do is probably like a quarter of a mile, half a mile apart, because then they're going to move and find their own space. But if the habitat is really full of beaver, I won't put beaver there because that's not fair to the beaver that are already there, and it's not fair to the beaver that I'm relocating.
So let's talk. I want to go way, way back to the beginning and talk about the effects of beaver on the landscape again. And I don't know if you've known, if this is true in Colorado, I think it is, but I've noticed here, I live near a pond as well as a stream, and I've noticed that over the last 15 years, populations of dragonflies have completely collapsed. And there's a lot less, I see a lot fewer dragonflies. And let's talk about the effects, if you want to, of beavers on dragonflies, butterflies, other little beings, other tiny little beings.
Okay. God, I'm glad you brought this up. Oh, we got to do this again. When you got a beaver pond, the water in the winter is warmer. The water in the summer is cooler. So it helps to help the little insects and so forth survive and flourish. The other thing, and this is so cool. Well, I'm going to tell you the sad part first. There was this place, a town, I don't remember the name of it, but it was on, you know, west of here in the mountains. And they killed all the beaver, every one of them going up a mountain, because they were concerned about West Nile, right? They were all concerned about that. Well, what I found out is that the mosquitoes that are cause of West Nile, you're not going to find them in a damn beaver pond because the water's moving. Also, if it's not moving, but it's a beaver pond, what you have is the most amazing insects. I mean, they're so mind-blowing, you wouldn't believe it. People don't even notice them. And they help to keep the little mosquito larvae, whatever, down. They eradicate it. And it's the healthy beaver pond. You have a healthy beaver pond, then you're not going to have all those problems. See, nature has it all figured out. They've got it all balanced and beautiful and fabulous. And then we come along, we don't like this, we don't like that, and we screw it up. We need to sit back, learn the life around us, and enjoy that magical dance of nature. Any time you do something in nature, you do it with such a soft hand, such a tiny little soft hand, because that little effect that you have actually will become something big. Don't rock the boat. Just sit there, enjoy, learn, and oh my gosh, I mean, what more can you say, man?
Well, that would be a really good end, but I want to ask one more question, which is that what can people all over North America who hear this interview, two questions. The first one is, how can they contact you if they want to discuss something about beavers, or if they want to, somebody in Kentucky wants to have beaver at their place, whom would they contact? And second is, what can people do for beaver generally, no matter where you live? How can people help beaver?
Well, let's take them one by one. What was the first one?
The first one was, let's say there's somebody in Tennessee or somebody in Colorado who wants some beaver on their land. Whom do they contact and how?
Well, they should contact me, and then I will explain it to them. Because oftentimes you have to get a hold of, if you know of an ethical trapper at all, and he's willing to relocate the whole family, then he would be good to go with. But please call me. Please. I will be on the phone. Anything that comes up, I am here for you. I will. Let's talk about, let's discuss it, because it has to be done right. That's only fair for the beaver. If you take care of the beaver will take care of you.
And okay, and that's great. And how do they contact you?
If you Google my name, Sherry Tippy, just Sherry Tippy, you will find page after page in Google. And it's got my home address, it's got my phone number, and I mean, anybody can call me. I'll talk. The hard thing is to get me to shut up. but seriously, you go on Google and you can find me that way. Also, if anybody wants to get involved, honey, I can dance, I can cut hair, I can live trap beaver, but I'm not that great on a computer. So if anybody would like to get involved, help me, okay?
Okay, so the next thing, thank you so much for that. And I guess I do have two more questions. The next question is, what can they do, apart from contacting you, what else can people do, or in addition to contacting you, what can people do to help beaver in Georgia, Massachusetts, wherever they are, what can they do there to help?
I'll tell you a person you can call in California. Her name is Heidi Perryman. The organization is called Worth a Dam, and she is in Martinez, California. Fabulous gal. Now, if people want to make a difference on how their wildlife is handled, it'd be great if you would, call me again, because I can then direct you towards a group in your state if I'm aware of one that will be able to help you. But you have to speak up and scream. Tell you why. when I first wanted to do the big thing of live trapping beaver, the division was like going, holy mackerel, they were opening up a can of worms. So I went to the media, and it turned out that 250 people called the Division of Wildlife and was screaming, don't you kill those beaver, blah, blah, blah. So get the media on your side. Everyone has to work together. And I'm telling you, you may think that it's hard work, and it is hard work, but honey, you will never do anything more important in your life. And talk about, I mean, spiritually, it'll just uplift your soul.
Well, thank you so much for all that. And I would like to thank those of us for listening. My guest today has been Sherry Tippy. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.